This podcast is a Uniting Heart and Soul production. Hello and welcome back to Filthy Hope, a podcast from Uniting Heart and Soul in Wallara, where we dive into the grey spaces where Jesus, life and culture intersect. I'm your host, Jonty Cornford, creative director here at Uniting Heart and Soul, and joining me, of course, is the Reverend Vanessa Williams-Henke, senior pastor here at Uniting Heart and Soul. This week, we're continuing our look into topics of intimacy and sexuality by having a discussion about masturbation. Yes, that's right. We're going to go there. So it sort of goes without saying that it's worth checking in with yourself or other people that you might be listening with to make sure that you're comfortable with the content that we're going to be covering in today's episode. The usual swearing warning applies too, but honestly, I think that's probably the least of your worries this week. I'm really excited about this week's episode because, like the best episodes that we do here, it embodies our ethos of radical honesty and our no bullshit approach to faith and religion. We hope you enjoy the episode, and I'll catch you on the other side. Ness, welcome to the podcast.
Yay.
How you feeling?
Oh, I'm not looking forward to this one, Jonty.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. Going to be interesting.
Not a fan of Touch Myself. You could play that song now, couldn't you?
Yeah.
How does that go again?
Theme song for the week.
I think so.
It's not a topic that we're particularly comfortable talking about, especially as Christians.
Yeah.
But as part of this series, Love, Sex and Jesus, we're talking about all things intimacy and sexuality. So we're just going to talk about it. We are, of course, talking about masturbation.
Oh, you just said it and looked at me in the eye. It's like...
I'm going to look you directly in the eye every time
not
I say
coping.
It. No, and because I am a 24-year-old that went through public education, I'm going to be referring to it as... wanking, because
of course you are.
That's the language that is familiar to me.
And me.
So I've probably already covered this, but as with all of these episodes in this series, warning, we're gonna go there. We're gonna do it sensitively, and we're gonna navigate our way through it, but we are gonna be talking about masturbation. So
can I be just clear at the outset that I'm not an expert on this topic?
Oh, neither.
On any level, so I can only talk from personal experience.
Yeah, absolutely.
And what I think I know, mm-hmm. which is not very much.
And we're going to be hearing from some other people through this episode. We're going to be looking at some different sources, some maybe more helpful than others in understanding sexuality. Because, yes, I'm also not a sexual health expert. So we're going to be hearing from some other people as we try to unravel... this topic. But before we do that, let's set the scene, let some steam off, so to speak. That's my pun for the week. Ness, what's so grinding your gears?
I'm not going to do it until you play the song.
Okay.
Oh, I love that bit of music, Jonty. That's the best. Okay, so I'm on my way here today and I get this desperate call from my kid. Mom, I've had to pull over. I've got a flat tire. I said, oh, babe, that's okay. And she said, no, Mum, it's not okay. So this is a second degree trauma vent central,
okay?
Because it didn't happen to me.
Yep.
But I received it as the mum, right? Yep. So what's happened is... this truck has been driving ahead of Aurora and metal poles have fallen off the truck onto Ride Road, and a whole series of them. A car in front of Slink has swerved to miss the metal poles that are now on the road. That car nearly gets cleaned up by another car as it swerves. Aurora makes a decision to not swerve and to keep going straight ahead because she sees that this dude nearly dies in a car accident. And in doing so, goes over the metal poles, ka-clunk, ka-clunk, gets a massive flat tyre. The kid is on the way to doing speech pathology with an autistic child at daycare. She turns off onto a side road. She realises her tyre is stuffed. She's got four brand new tyres. Yep. She's a student at uni. She's now going to miss her first client. So she's going to miss income.
Yep.
She's got a tyre that she's going to have to change that she's never changed before. She has seriously got the shits about the start of her day. She rings me and she says, "Mum, this is so unfair. I've done nothing fucking wrong. I'm just going about my day, off to have my day at work, Mum, and I'm now up for a new tyre. I've had to call Dad to come and help me because I've never changed a tyre. So Rob's going to be starting his day late because he's coming to rescue the kid. Bless his soul. Love you, Rob. And she is going to miss out on income today. She may not even miss. She may not even get to her second client. She may be late." So she says to me, "Mum, what do I do?" And I said, "For first of all, I'm just so grateful you didn't swerve.
Yeah.
You made a really good choice. I just affirmed her decisions in everything she did. I said, you're a freaking star. You haven't been driving that long and you've made some really wise decisions. I think you need to ring the cops and let them know that there's these metal poles on the road. This could be causing potential other issues." And she said, "Yeah, I'm getting off the phone. I'm going to ring the police right now, Mum. Tell them this is fucked. They should do something about it." So she does. And then she rings me back. "Mum, I rang the police. They were amazing. They said to me I did an amazing job and they're on their way and they thanked me for giving them a call. I've got the shits, Mum." And I said, "Don't worry, doll. Don't worry. I will put some money into your account. I'll buy you a tyre." So now I've got the shits because I'm up for a tyre and I did nothing wrong.
Because you're too good of a mother.
Play the music, Jonty.
Amazing. Love that. I if you're playing bingo along at home, I'll tick it off, take a shot, do whatever, because I'm going to bring up a movie again. But I have always had this thing with trucks or bigger cars with loads that need to be tied down. And I have like this almost like irrational fear as a result of seeing the film Final Destination with a big truck with a bunch of logs not tied down on the back of the truck, and horror movie stuff ensues on the road. So if I'm driving and I pull up behind like a big truck with something like even like one of the big trucks that have like other cars stacked on top, I'll just go into another lane.
Yeah, hate that.
Yeah, I'll steer clear of that stuff.
Not a fan.
Yeah. So we can't delay it any longer, I don't think.
I know. Don't look at me, though. I can't look at you when you say it. I know you're going to say the M word. Don't look at me. I get embarrassed.
We're going to talk about wanking. For people that are listening, I'm covering my eyes. I'm not talking. I'm not making eye contact with Ness. We're going to talk about masturbation. And the reason I think it's important to talk about it is the same reason we're talking about a lot of these topics, is that historically the church is awful at managing this.
I've never heard a minister ever talk about masturbation on any level in a church, from the pulpit, or even in a conversation, ever. Mm. I've picked up this book called Teen Sex at a Christian bookshop. We'll unpack that in a moment.
Yes.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. And I think it's interesting. And we'll get to this later, some of the what the Bible has to say about masturbation, because it's almost nothing. But it's this repeated thing that seems to happen where the Bible has minimal to nothing to say about a topic, therefore the church teaches just don't do it.
I wonder where that started, Jonty, historically, and where the first initial shame happened. Did it happen in the garden? Do you know what I mean? Was it the shame that humanity felt in the Garden of Eden narrative, and that's where shame came about? Do you know what I mean? I wonder. I don't know. I'm just hypothesising. Did it all start then? And we've just perpetuated this story of shame around our bodies and therefore touching and the experimental touching of ourselves. You know?
Interesting. Yeah. I don't know. We can unpack all of that.
Yeah. I mean, I've read a lot of theologians and they never talk about wanking, ever. Some of them are wankers, but they never talk about it.
I think the biggest experience I had with like theology and talking about this topic was at a high school camp. Mm-hmm. I won't name it, but it was quite a big Christmas holidays week long camp. Not just in my church community, but like the wider community of the area that I grew up in. Lots and lots and lots of people went, and in high school. They have like different age groups separated, obviously. And when you're in the high school group, there was one afternoon in the week where the guys and girls would separate, and the girls would go and talk about, you know,
periods,
girl stuff that the guys apparently don't want to hear, and vice versa. The guys would go off and talk about as if sexuality is something that happens isolated. I mean, that's a whole other topic about whether sex education should be segregated or when.
What did you talk about?
Well, this is the whole thing, right? And it seemed like, I don't remember this dude's name, it was this guest that came in to talk to us. We were all sort of between 13 and 15 or 16. And basically told us that masturbation was wrong and that masturbation can only lead to impure thoughts.
Okay.
And you've only got so many shots at having a baby, and the more you masturbate, the less likely it is that you'll be able to conceive.
Oh,
which is
medically incorrect. Wow.
Just fact checked that for me. Not true. So that was, I think credit to myself and the other young guys that were there with me at the time. I think we sniffed that out as bullshit at the time.
Right.
But it's just interesting to me that that's the only representation of Christian input into masturbation and self-pleasure that I ever had was this guy saying, just don't do it, it's bad.
And I wonder where he got it. Who told him that crap?
Well, and I always wonder, and we've had this discussion before, with these people that have really strong opinions about sexual ethics, seems to me that more often than not, you do a little digging and they've got their own thing going on. Like you look at all of the sort of, there's recently been an ongoing thing where pastors are getting unveiled as having affairs or pornography addictions or covering up abuse or whatever it is. There are all these examples recently, and not just recently, throughout history, the history of the church, but particularly recently as culture has sort of caught up in all areas with the Me Too movement and a bunch of other things around holding men, not just men, but everyone accountable for, you know, these things. So I always, whenever I hear someone in a position of power in the church telling me what I can and can't do with my body, or particularly telling women what they can and can't do with their body, I'm immediately suspicious. Which is why conversations like this are important.
I hope it's helpful. I had to Google about the female orgasm because I have never in my life had a conversation that I can remember with another woman other than my mother at the kitchen bench where Dad pulled out the pens and drew the picture of a clitoris and a vagina. I don't remember another conversation with another woman about orgasm ever. I don't even remember that ever. I know I've been to some hen's nights and there'll be, you know, penis straws and, you know, pretend vibrators, or they might give a bride-to-be a vibrator, and that's a thing, and everybody laughs. But I don't ever remember a conversation with another woman about that level of personal intimacy. And I find that interesting. Do men talk about pulling themselves with each other?
Look, it's one of the, I think, and we had a similar conversation about porn a little while back. I can only speak from my experience.
Yeah.
My experience in high school was as soon as guys started figuring out
how it works. Yeah. Went to town.
There was pretty open discussion about that sort of thing.
Okay. Do you laugh about it? Is it a fun thing? Is it funny?
Yeah, I think so. And it's not something that I talk to my mates about at all now.
Right.
I mean, there's no need to. Like, it's that's private. But I think when you're 12, 13, 14, 15...
Yep.
And you're suddenly... Your body's changing and you're having these different experiences and yeah. different expressions of...
And having an erection that you probably can't control.
That's funny. Like,
is it funny?
I remember, like, the experience is pretty universal, I think, with guys at a certain age, whether it's you or someone else getting a boner at school and not being able to hide it.
Yeah.
Fucking hilarious. Like, that's so funny. I mean, it's...
And do you each laugh about it?
Incredibly embarrassing, and everyone points and laughs. But, like, it's... Of course it's funny.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. But I think when it comes to actual, like, measured and mature discussion about what healthy sexuality looks like, I don't see much of that.
Yeah, interesting.
I mean, especially in church circles. Yep. I do remember there was one experience, and I remember who it was. I haven't seen this person in yonks, and there's zero chance that he's listening to this podcast, but I remember, I think it was in year 9, and word got out that this guy had gone to see his GP and had been told that he wasn't allowed to masturbate anymore for his health.
Whoa.
Because he was doing it so much that it was affecting his health. He was becoming dehydrated and he was...
Rubbed the skin off.
losing sleep and...
Poor
and,
bastard.
And having, you know, stomach pains and things like that.
Oh, my gosh. And the friction to the old guy.
Yeah. Ugh. It just... Yeah. So, and that's the closest I think we came to having a genuine discussion about, you know, healthy... exploration of your own body.
And you know, Jonty, thinking about sex education even in the early 80s, I remember in year 7, so that was 1979, learning about, in sex ed, learning about erections and ejaculation and ovaries and how to fall pregnant and all of that. I don't ever remember any conversation about... the female.
Mm.
Only our reproductive organs, not our clitoris or how that works, or conversations about a G-spot that this Christian book claims there it's not the truth. I'm going there.
Yeah, let's crack it open.
I'm telling you. It says, this Christian book says it's a myth.
Yep.
It's a total myth. The G-spot sex scientists, they say, have not identified a specific supersensitive spot in the vaginal wall. So there is no need to strive to find it, Christian girls. Don't go trying to find the spot, girlfriends. So then I had a little look at a medical journal, and that's, I'm calling out bullshit, because they say that there is. And you agreed, Jonty. You said yes.
Well, I had heard and... I haven't fact-checked this either, but my understanding is that current medical understanding of the female anatomy is that the G-spot, in the way that it was initially thought to be, doesn't exist, but it is in fact that the clitoris itself is up to 10 centimetres long.
Yes.
And so what that is actually just stimulation of the clitoris in a different spot to the external...
Yeah. Yeah, and that the clitoral wall goes inside the vagina. Mm. And so, of course, we would think that it's this particular spot is inside the vagina. So it's actually external and internal,
yes.
Right? So it's a whole organ. And if you think about that, if you think about the penis, the penis and the vagina, it's like an extension. The penis is an extension of the vagina, you know?
Well, and it's really interesting. So, and I actually learnt this semi-recently. But, and again, this could be complete and utter dribble. So,
Don't say dribble.
Complete and utter bullshit. This could be complete and utter bullshit. So I might edit this out if I do a bit of research later and find out this isn't true.
Yeah.
But when you are developing in your in utero,
yeah,
you begin
as a woman,
as a woman,
female,
and
that's
the
right.
On the nutsack, the
yes,
there's like a crease down the middle. That is where the vagina closed up.
I believe that's right.
I think that's right. Yeah. That could be bullshit,
when I said that the vagina is an extension of the penis. That's what I meant in our early embryonic development.
And when you read about people that are intersex, so have a combination of both, or
yep,
or neither, or some additional subtraction of the more gender normative sex organs,
yep,
that's when you start to see things like the female clitoris and the male penis are, you know, they're not the same thing, but it's a really fascinating thing to see how the human reproductive system is kind of all, well, I mean, of course it's linked, that's how human life is developed and moved along in an evolutionary sense as well, so.
Exactly. I want to tell you about this other myth about the female orgasm while we're there, is that they talk about in the Christian book that's teaching teens about healthy sexual relationships and touching yourself, what is a good and a bad and a nasty, sinful thing to do. A woman can have, this is a myth, they're saying,
okay,
a woman can have multiple orgasms. And this doctor in this book, she says, this is a pornography and erotic novel-driven myth. The fact is that it is extremely rare for a girl to have multiple orgasms.
So immediately my question is, what are they talking about? Is this ever or in one go or in a close amount of time? Or like there's no scientific method in what they're at. Like immediately I just go, this is total bullshit.
But. Well, and we know for men, they have to, it's a bit like a gun, they've got to reload. You know, you get the action going, you ejaculate, and then you can't just go, now I'm going to ejaculate again. It doesn't happen like that.
No.
You need to take some time, settle your jets.
if it's in a movie, you drink some orange juice.
Is that what they do in a movie? Yeah. I don't know about that. They just lay back, have a bit of a rest, recharge the gun, and bam, baby, and you guys can go again after a period of time. But they're actually saying that women can also, and women can definitely, in this Medical News Today journal that I'm reading, says that women definitely can orgasm in succession.
Mm.
And that does happen. Not for everybody, but for some women it does. So it's not a myth. Sorry, Dr. Patricia, I'm sorry, lovely. I think you don't have your information correct there. I think, can I just add one more thing? I think what's interesting is that there's no medical evidence that talks about why the female orgasm actually occurs, because we know that the male orgasm happens so that we can reproduce. Beautiful, thank you, Lord. But for the female, there's no actual biological necessity for it to occur for a woman to actually fall pregnant. And my thought is, I wonder, has God just created that as a gift to womanhood to be able to have that magnificent pleasure in the sexual act so that she would feel a closer bonding with her partner? Whether it be a male or a female, so that she would have a closer level of intimacy and therefore a desire to want to have sex again, because it actually feels really nice. It's a pleasure-seeking part of how God created us. And I would think that God that I worship and love loves us so much that he wouldn't just give pleasure to the boy, he would also give it to the woman in equal measure.
In a medical sense, there's no reason for the clitoris to exist other than
pleasure.
Pleasure. And I think it's, again, could be bullshit. Don't take this as gospel, but it's the only organ in the human body, male or female, that is present solely for the purposes of pleasure.
And there's a couple of other medical things that they say that come as a benefit. And I don't think God would just give the benefit to men. Mm. I think these benefits medically he would give to all of us. Talks about in this medical journal that I'm reading, to improve a person's mood, to relieve our stress levels, to boost our immunity, Jonty. That was new information to me. And certainly, as we can imagine, to foster better relationships. Mm. I know that. I feel a deep level of closeness when Rob and I have sex and that beautiful moment happens, and particularly if it happens in sync with each other, which has taken, I'm telling you, 35 years of marriage to learn that one, baby, to manage the timing arrangement. That's pretty special when that happens. It's like, whoa, fireworks all at the same time. There's a real closeness that happens in that. I mean, there's closeness when I still feel a deep closeness when I don't orgasm but Rob does. And he would probably say the same. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's a beautiful thing that God created for us to have. And I think that I've talked about it in partnership, with my partner, lifelong partner. But I wonder then about the pleasuring of our own self, mm-hmm. so that we can further explore how our bodies operate and function.
Yeah.
I think that there's a real role that plays if it's done in a healthy way.
For sure.
Right?
For sure. And this is where I think it's really interesting to note, again, that the Bible doesn't really mention masturbation at all. So to say that the Bible says it's bad, therefore don't do it, it just isn't biblical. Mm-hmm. So therefore we have to think, okay, well, what role would masturbation play in a healthy Jesus-centric life?
Yep.
And, I mean, you just outlined a few of the health benefits.
Yep. But I think also if we're talking about it from a Christian view, I'm wondering if the unhealthy idea of masturbation being not a good thing for somebody to do, I wonder if it comes from the whole idea of gluttony. Mm-hmm. You know, the idea of a gluttonous life. And so if we're gluttonous or addicted to anything, whether it be food or alcohol or drugs or porn or sex or shopping or obsessed with cleaning or whatever your thing is, obsessed with Netflix, any of those things can be unhealthy in our lives, right?
If they start to take a hold of your life and dictate behavior around it, right?
Right, like your friend.
Yeah.
Like your young friend.
Prime
perfect example. Right?
Perfect example. It starts to affect your health negatively and you're, you know, not sleeping or you're not eating or you're not... It's the same with any addiction.
Yeah.
That knowing what addictive behavior is and knowing when those things are actually starting to take hold and change your behavior and, like, your day starts to revolve around when you can next... take that next hit of heroin or...
Right. Have another drink.
Have another drink. Sit down in front of the laptop and get the porn up again. Whatever it is,
pull yourself.
Right? Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting because I get really suspicious, again, of people that say that they've never masturbated. Mm-hmm. It's not that I don't trust them. It's just that I'm suspicious because it's especially for men, and I use that word broadly in the sense that anyone that has male reproductive organs, I can't say that this is the same for everyone, but like part of developing and going through puberty and having hormones change the way that your body manifests physically is having wet dreams. And that in itself, I'm not saying this is a form of masturbation, but like automatically that's when you've orgasmed. And if there's a, if we're going to use the Bible, there's that passage about in the Old Testament, we're going to come to it later. So I'll remind myself of where it is. But God being displeased by someone spilling their seed on the ground.
Yep.
If that's your basis for sin being committed, then something that happens naturally and without any intent on the part of the, let's not call them the male, the person with the penis, automatically that line of thinking is kind of, you're crossing some hairs there and you're not really following a straight line through with the, you know.
Can I ask you, when a wet dream happens, does your, do you need to be touching your penis for it to happen?
No, not at all.
It just happens. It's just a...
Just happens.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't want to spend too long on it because it's not something that I think is totally relevant to this, but it's also not something that I want to prescribe as like the male experience that everyone...
Oh, no. Thanks for answering it, though. Yeah. I just don't have the anatomy. And I haven't raised sons, so I just didn't know. So thanks for answering
that. No, not at all. Is there anything else in this book that we want to have a look at before
there's so much that I don't need to talk about.
Okay.
It's just unhelpful.
Well, what we might do now then is we might cut to a clip of another Christian who has some slightly different views on what masturbation is. We're going to watch, you guys are going to watch, and we're going to come back and we're going to discuss some of the points that come up in this video.
Also,
so we're going to cut to a clip.
The first argument against masturbation comes from Genesis 38, 8 through 10. In this verse, God condemns Onan for spilling his seed on the ground. Most modern churches acknowledge this was never about masturbation. In this verse, Onan was called by God to impregnate a woman, and he refused by spilling his seed onto the ground. So this argument, we can kind of shut down right there.
Spilling the seed on the ground.
Yep.
Fascinating stuff, isn't it? In Bridgerton, the lead female character gets married to the lead hot male character and they have this beautiful, sexy thing that happens. She finds out she's not falling pregnant and she thinks there's something wrong with her, and yet, and she does, she's very unaware of how sex works and what the situation is, and she knows that she's having intercourse with her husband but doesn't understand about the sperm needing to land in her so that she will fall pregnant. And what he does is he pulls out and lands the seed onto the bed. And the whole series is about this in their relationship and how he betrays her by actually doing that, which I think is so interesting, fascinating.
So this also, like, I find it really interesting. There's, and I immediately think of the Monty Python sketch in The Meaning of Life, Every Sperm is Sacred, which we might play a clip of now.
You don't have to have any clothes on, you're a Catholic the moment that came, because every sperm is sacred. Every sperm is great. If a sperm is wasted, God gets quite irate.
Every sperm is sacred. Every sperm is...
So the thing that this is making fun of is the idea, I believe it's a Roman Catholic idea, and it's in other
Jewish.
It's a Jewish. It's a pretty fairly common idea amongst theologians in different sects of Christianity and other religions as well, that sex and male ejaculation should be preserved solely for attempting to procreate, to fall pregnant.
Yeah.
Which, you know, we've already kind of spoken about this idea of even just the idea of female pleasure, which if we're talking strictly reproductively has nothing to do with it.
Not at all.
But if we're talking about what God says about it multiple times throughout the Bible about relationships being mutual and self-giving, and you just have to read pick up any chapter in Song of Solomon and read just like the beautiful poetry. We were talking about this the other day in my Bible study crew. Shout out to any of you guys that are listening. That like Song of Solomon almost plays like you're reading a text thread.
Yeah.
The back and forth between two lovers. That's got nothing to do with procreation. That's about expressing your love for someone
and desire
and wanting to express that physically in a self-giving mutual way with another person.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's interesting, and I mean, we can, as Brenda from God is Great kind of said, this passage isn't about masturbation. It's about in the story, God wanting someone to impregnate someone for furthering the bloodline, and he doesn't carry through and pulls out.
But Christians use this spilling the seed as a reason as to not to masturbate. It's a Christian mythology of as to why.
Yeah, which, you know, something I bang on about constantly is you have to read the Bible in context. And when you read this passage in full, it's not about masturbation. So, you know, I mean, people are entitled to their own opinions, and that's great. Mm. And diversity of opinion is really important. But
so it's interesting.
It seems pretty clear cut to me.
When I was ovulating, I was rolling an egg a month. You know, there is no drama about me not rolling an egg and it being impregnated every month, you know, while I was on the pill, or not, you know, as a young girl, rolling eggs from the age of 12, you know, they weren't being impregnated. There was no crisis around my egg falling out of my fallopian tube and plonking into my uterus and then rolling out in a period every month. It's so interesting.
Yeah. And we might come back to this as well, but all of this comes out of a culture of male dominance.
Always.
And so you have to kind of start to unravel that a little bit as well when we look at cultural ideas of sexuality, and particularly with masturbation and the orgasm and procreation and sexual ethics and how that plays into religion. Mm. All of it has come out of a historical context of male dominance and the female just being the childbearing party in the relationship.
And the reciprocal.
Yeah.
You know, the receiver of the sperm. Take that, sister. Bam.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
Let's move on.
Have a look at another clip.
We're often told that masturbation increases our sexual desire.
What it actually does is it increases your hunger, thirst, and craving for it even more. And you are going to want to carry that out, which is going to lead to fornication. If you are married, it's going to come a point where you're going to be tired of imagining yourself with this other person, and you're going to ultimately want to have an adulterous affair with them.
I've already told you guys, I am anti-fear, just as God is anti-fear. 80 times in the Bible, he says, fear not. If you masturbate, you will definitely cheat on your spouse. If you masturbate, you'll just be a sex fiend. Those are fear-based ideas. Masturbation is a tool that I use to abstain from sex, and it works. For me, when I'm thinking about not having sex, not touching myself, I am only thinking about sex and touching myself. Versus if I choose to masturbate, those thoughts are gone. This will not have the same effect for everyone. Everyone's body is unique. Everyone's limitations and desires are unique. And you have every right to assess within yourself, because again, it's not directly stated in the Bible, whether or not masturbating is harming you or aiding you, whether it's a positive thing or a negative thing in your life.
So I find this part of the discussion really interesting, because there is this kind of misconception that if you're masturbating, then you must be indulging in lustful, sexual, desire-based behavior that isn't healthy or doesn't line up with what the Bible says about sexuality. And I actually think, like, yes, that can be the case. So we've talked about pornography before in the past. If that's starting to become a problem and you're focusing on masturbation in a setting of watching other people having sex, and you're lusting for these other people And if there's, like, you know, a particular person that you enjoy watching, or if it's just the idea of watching other people, if you're in a relationship and you're suddenly becoming attached to watching other people, we've already talked about this, but that's going to affect how you relate to the people in your life, to the partners that you interact with physically. But a distinction to that is this idea that masturbation is kind of this etch-a-sketch that we have, that we can use to shake the etch-a-sketch clean. Especially if you're in, I can speak for both when you're in a relationship and when you're not in a relationship. If you're in a relationship, and you can probably speak to this as well, and you're ready to go and your partner is tired, sick, just not in the mood, you know, if there's this idea around masturbation that it's wrong and you don't do it, either you become incredibly frustrated in that situation, or worst case scenario, that becomes a real problem about,
yeah,
you know, unwanted sex in a relationship. If they're not into it, just pop into the other room, have a wank.
Oh,
or, like,
I know,
they might even be happy to help you out. But,
yeah,
like,
exactly. I think if I had $20 for every time I'd asked Rob to go and please pull himself, or I could help him pull himself, can I just not? I just don't want to,
yeah,
have the action myself. It's so good. That's good for everybody.
It's a win-win, right?
It's a total win-win.
Even when you're not in a relationship, I think it's just as important to think about it in terms of, you know, if we're going to put our Jesus hats on, not being lustful towards other people in a way that's based on power or dominance or just taking in a really sort of transactional way.
Yep.
I think, and there's study that and data driven sort of study that's shown that masturbation and even porn use actually has a positive effect in people with not sexual deviances, but things that are culturally and legally not okay.
Mm.
Being able to let off that impulse safely through masturbation has a direct correlation to decreased
crime
and sexual deviancy and sexual crime and all those sorts of things. So to say that masturbation is just wrong and you shouldn't do it is just putting this black and white filter over something that's actually incredibly complex.
And I wonder, Jonty, is it like any other urge that we have? So we get this physiological urge that's definitely linked to psychology, so our brain and our body working in conjunction with each other. We get the urge to seek sexual pleasure, either by ourselves or with a partner. Is it any different to the desire to seeing a piece of chocolate cake and going, oh, I really want that chocolate cake. Damn. I've had a lot of calories today, but I'm really going to go and have that piece of chocolate cake. And then we don't think anything of that, just going and having a bit of chocolate cake,
but at the
satisfying
same time,
your brain.
But we also have to, that desire for chocolate cake, unchecked, becomes
gluttony.
Exactly. And
totally.
Obesity and, like.
But we don't think anything of it, do we? We just go, oh, she's having a bit of chocolate cake.
Mm. In moderation.
In moderation. That's exactly right. Is it any different, Jonty? Then, and then the release that you get from a chocolate cake, you've got sugar on board. It's just like a feeling, it's just such a pleasurable sensation to taste the beautiful flavours of the icing and to swallow that creamy texture. It's just absolutely magnificent, chocolate cake, right? Or whatever it is that...
My innuendo...
Yeah, don't
going
say
off
it.
The
I know, shut up. Shut up. I looked at your face. Don't go there. But I think unchecked, like you say, there could be an issue there. Is it any different than at the end of the day when you've had whatever's gone on in your day? You don't even, to want to masturbate, you don't need to be thinking lustful thoughts about anything.
Which brings us to the next point.
It's not about that.
Yeah. Which brings us to this next point that I really want to discuss, and we had a great conversation about this off mic, is masturbation is a really, really intensely in your own body experience.
Yeah.
And if we're, the whole point of this series is to promote, sexual health and an openness and education around sexuality and intimacy.
And removing the shame tag.
Yeah, exactly. Masturbation allows you to become really present and physically, in tune with your body.
And how it works and functions.
And when we talk about really bad sexual experiences and we talk about like dissociation and separating the physical experience from what's going on mentally or spiritually or emotionally.
Yep.
What masturbation gives you the opportunity to do is experience your body in a sexual way safely.
Yep.
But presently. And you can start to really understand, because every physically and sexually every person is different. And so starting to understand what it is that your body enjoys and how and in what setting sets you up for really great intimacy and sexual experiences with a partner.
Yeah.
Because if you have no idea what you like and all of a sudden you find yourself having sex with a person that you love, the sex probably isn't going to be that great. I mean, it could be really good, but it's not going to be as good as if you know.
If you know what works for your body.
Because then you can tell your partner,
and
this works for me.
Yeah. And the level of touch that you need to feel okay or safe in that space, I think is really important. And the only way you work that out is by often experience it with the partner or with understanding. And I think the real understanding comes through your own self and knowing what touch is adequate for you and what feels safe and good for you.
Yeah.
And what works for you in a holistic way so that you can actually have what I believe is a God-designed moment of intimacy with yourself.
Mm. We've talked about this show before, but sex education. There's a character whose name I now can't remember, but there's a sequence and an ongoing sort of B-plot where she is ashamed and a little bit embarrassed about the fact that she can't orgasm when she has sex with her boyfriend, who they're in a really great, loving relationship. But she's pretending to have orgasms with her boyfriend.
Do you want me to do it now? Because I was really good at it.
No, because I'll just edit it out anyway.
Okay.
You've done it before.
I did it for years. I was so good at faking it.
Oh, we can... There's that scene from When Harry Met Sally.
I know,
it
was
diner.
Just... I was so good at it.
So she's doing that and her boyfriend calls her out on it and she doesn't know what to do.
Yep.
And I can't remember what... I think it may be the sex therapist character in the film. I can't remember. In the TV show, I haven't seen this season in a long time. But there's then this really... It's played for comedy montage of her suddenly discovering her own orgasm through masturbation.
Oh, wow.
And it's funny and it's kind of raunchy. But it's also this really... Because then she suddenly has all these ideas for how she wants to have sex with her boyfriend because she suddenly discovered all the things that get her going.
Yeah.
And I think that's a really great example of... It's not about lustfulness. I mean, it can be. But masturbation is just about being present in your own body and understanding how your own body works and therefore how it's going to react with a partner when you find yourself in a relationship.
I go back to the chocolate cake because I tell you, for me it's similar. The idea of having a beautiful piece of chocolate cake. And I'm on Jenny Craig at the moment.
So chocolate cake sounds particularly inviting.
I'm pretty lusty after that piece of chocolate cake, can I say? Because I think of it and I can think chocolate cake and I can already get a squirting in my mouth, Jonty. It's starting like literally now. I'm talking about it. I'm visualising the chocolate cake.
I need like an innuendo horn.
I'm just telling you, is it any different? It's no different. I've got the sensation. My brain is conjuring up a piece of chocolate cake right now. It's a bit warm from the microwave. There's a dollop of ice cream. I'm putting that first mouthful into my mouth. I've got the juice coming in my mouth right now as I describe it to you, right? Is that... And if I eat too much of that stuff, I'm going
to
get really fat and clog
and
my arteries.
And it becomes an obsession. Behavior,
I can't go past the shop without having a piece.
Can I tell a story?
Yeah.
This is, and I think this, I wish I knew about this when I was 15. Blue balls. Have you heard of this phrase before? So, I went to hospital. So, I've had a surgery downstairs before for a separate thing. Not a big deal, pretty minor. Sorted it out. It was to do with a cyst that was there since birth, and then with puberty it became inflamed. All sorted. I had a girlfriend at this point, and all of a sudden I'm like, I feel really uncomfortable downstairs.
Ooh.
I've got pain in my lower back.
Shit.
I've got pain in my abdomen. Having already had surgery down there a few years prior, I was like, this isn't good. Check myself in to emergency. All good. Nothing's wrong. I'm like, okay, that's really weird. That I was in a lot of pain, a lot of discomfort. No, you're all good. So I went home. I can't remember how much later again, but like within the same year, happened again. Went to emergency. I was in like had trouble walking, lower back pain, really, really sore, tender downstairs, stomach pain, like creeping up my lower back, really, really uncomfortable. Go to emergency. And they go, you've got appendicitis. I think your appendix has burst because it was tender to
touch. Palpate, yeah.
I was like, okay, so they plan to the next morning take me in and just get it out. Wake up the next morning, fine. So I stayed the night in hospital, no pain. And I'm like, what on earth is going on? Another doctor comes in and says, and I explain, and he says, how old are you? And I said, oh, I think I was 19 at the time. 19. Do you have a girlfriend or a partner? I said, yeah. He's like, are you sexually active? And I said, no. And he goes, you just need to go and have a wank, mate. So this is a real thing with guys. If you get all worked up, and so like, you know, I wasn't having sex with this girlfriend at the time because we were a good Christian couple.
Oh.
But we were making out, we were doing other things and getting worked up, but then I wasn't doing anything about it.
Deadly sperm buildup, they call it.
Blue balls. It's a real thing. I was going to emergency thinking
God.
It's a real thing. And so you talk about masturbation being having health benefits. There you go. Like,
you have put a strain on our medical system with your blue balls. You need to pull yourself more off a jotty.
And it happened, you know, it's not many times. Like it was, I think I only went twice in that sort of string of a few months. But that was like, I was never told about that. That was never explained to me about, you know, the buildup of the male orgasm and things like that. So, you know, I think that's just another piece of information that I think.
Thanks for sharing That's deeply intimate, actually. Thanks for sharing.
Oh, and I'm totally cool sharing because I know that's a pretty common thing.
Men need to hear that stuff.
Yeah.
Women need to hear that stuff.
There's have you heard of the show Big Mouth?
No.
So it's an animated show. It's on Netflix and it's about young teenagers going through puberty. And it's comedy, and so they have when they reach puberty, they each get what's called a hormone monster, and it's a big furry monster that walks around next to them and talks, and it's a metaphor for puberty. And there's an episode about blue balls.
Oh wow!
And I actually highly recommend this show because I mean it's incredibly rude and incredibly sweary and raunchy, but. Talks about blue balls and it explains what it is in a funny way. Similar to sex education, I think it's actually really beneficial.
Do you know what I think we should do?
What's that?
I think we need to be cracking open these conversations in church, in normal life, in all our friendship circles. We should be free and shame-free to be able to have these conversations with our friends to help normalize masturbation in and through our conversations, help normalize conversations about orgasm so people can understand more about it and be not left feeling shameful if they're not having one, and understand that there's a a depth and a breadth to humanity, and we are all different. We all operate differently physiologically, and no two people are ever the same.
Absolutely.
And we are made magnificently in the image of God, and God has given us these exquisite bodies to be able to have children, to be able to seek pleasure amongst ourselves, to be able to do all the things and to be able to worship Him ultimately. I think it's a good bloody story, Jonty.
And it's also like worth adding, this isn't an invitation to just go and talk to everyone about wanking, because it in a safe, healthy...
People that you trust.
Exactly, exactly.
Wouldn't it be cool if you could, though? I feel like now, just after cracking this open with you, I now can look at you in the eye for a start. I don't have to cover my face. I'm feeling less shameful just having chatted with you.
Yeah.
I feel like ringing my girlfriends and having a bit of a morning tea with some chocolate cake and talking about it. I want to know about what they do and what their feelings are. I want to understand why we haven't talked about that stuff. We talk about all the other stuff, but never that topic.
Mm. And in the same way that I come down hard on the church prescribing don't masturbate, I want to make clear that we're not prescribing anything either.
No.
This is about... Make up your own decisions.
You as an individual.
Be open and have conversations with people and figure out what's right for you.
Just don't have shame.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's about if you're healthy and other people are healthy and it's not causing you, you know, to be lustful and affecting your relationships with other people, and you feel like I've talked about the concept of the huppah, the Jewish marriage canopy.
Yeah.
If you feel comfortable under that huppah, you know, go for it.
Yeah, that's right.
It's all God gave us sexual expressions for a reason. And I think when we separate our sexuality from the rest of our identity, that's when shame and dysfunction creeps in.
Yeah. And I even think this conversation would be helpful for couples.
Absolutely.
You know, to have this conversation. I know this, if I'd heard something like this when I was newly married, it certainly would have helped me, for sure.
It would have stopped me a couple of trips to... Emergency.
Oh, mate.
I would have just gone and sorted myself out.
Yeah. Oh, mate. Oh, what a great convo.
I'm really glad we had it. Hopefully it's... I hope it's been helpful for people.
Me too.
Even just if a couple of people have heard this and feel like they are able to have that conversation with people that they're safe with, that's all we can really ask for.
Yeah.
So... I think, do we
We're
leave
good.
It there?
Yeah.
We can revisit this later on if we feel like there's
combo.
More. But I've linked down below link to the book, but also the full 15-minute video from... I highly recommend God is Grey if you're interested in more sort of sex-positive, progressive Christian thought. Brenda's fantastic. Brenda, if you listen to this for whatever reason, we'd love to have you on the podcast.
She's so vulnerable.
We'll see what happens. That'd be fantastic. But yeah, I think we're
good.
We'll leave it there. Yeah. So, gratitude. It's my turn this time, isn't it? Gratitude this week, I want to talk about a wedding that I went to over the weekend. Ness knows that I was at this wedding because I wasn't at church. It was a wedding of two very good friends of mine, one of which she's been a close friend of mine in for my entire life. I don't remember ever her not being around. She's one of those... sort of close church friends that our parents were roughly the same age and went to church together, so we went to each other's birthday parties since two, and you know, the whole shebang. And even there are a number of people in that sort of close childhood group that, like, even if we're not particularly close in a we see each other every day friend type way,
beautiful,
we've still got that like,
you've got history,
we've got that connection, we've got that history, and you know, we
special,
you know, we're good friends. And her now husband, who also has a brilliant podcast called The Self Care Project, highly recommend, who's now having been dating my friend, they're now both very good friends with me. So I went to their wedding out in the Hunter Valley, spent the whole weekend. This is a two-pronged gratitude. Part one, more earnest and more genuine. I love weddings. They're so good. And especially when they're people that you have so many good memories and associations with and you care for them deeply as friends, seeing them express the love that you see every day when you see them together publicly and declare it in a way that is really bold and somewhat scary to me, is just, it's the best, right? Everyone loves a wedding.
Love it. Joy on legs.
So good. And, you know, we were a little bit worried about the weather because there was some sort of on and off rain. But by the time Saturday Arvo came along, clear blue skies, Hunter Valley in August. Lovely. Second part of gratitude. Because a bunch of us, obviously location, wedding, you got to find accommodation. So there are about 9 of us staying in this one Airbnb and then another 7 or 8 of us staying in another Airbnb a 30-second walk down the road. So there were quite a few of us hanging out. We were there on Friday morning, sort of roughly. We did a bunch of wineries, but then from Friday evening, people started coming in and we just had a whole thing. We had dinner together. We had a big breakfast together on Saturday morning. We, you know, suited up and
awesome.
The chicks put all the makeup on and did the whole thing. We did out into the field, took the photos. Just amazing sort of communal time. But both properties were clearly either the same owner or the same, whatever you want to call it, the same ownership company, whatever. Both had the same model hot tub. I got to tell you, we didn't even think that the hot tub was on because it had a canopy on it. Friday night, me and some mates, let's say we've had a few drinks. We've had more than a few drinks. It's about 1 o'clock in the morning. We've just finished. We'd cracked a really nice whiskey. We're like, oh, I think it's bedtime. We got to do some things tomorrow morning before the wedding, blah, blah, blah. My mate goes, I'm just going to go and check, see the hot tub, because we assumed that it would just be off and we would have to boot it up and let it warm up. He opens the canopy and this steam comes out and we just look at each other like, let's fucking do this. We were in that hot tub for so long.
Talk about dehydrated.
Oh, couple of beers in the hot tub. You got the jets going, you got the lights on. You're out like, you're just looking at the stars in the Hunter, clear sky. I've got to tell you, if you're going to a location wedding, find accommodation that has a hot tub.
Oh, unreal.
It was unreal. It was so good. And, you know, probably part of it is, you know, when you're pissed, the warm water is like twice as good.
Oh, and you're with your mates. It's just,
it was
like,
so good. And I remember we're sitting there just like talking a bunch of shit and, you know, just doing what drunk 20-something-year-old mates do. And I looked at my mates and just... Again, I was quite drunk, but I was just like, boys, I got to ask you, does life get any better? Oh. Like, I think this is the pinnacle. Oh. Drinking beer in a hot tub at 2 o'clock in the morning in the Hunter where you got your mate's wedding the next morning, like, does it get better? We're all like, no, I don't think it does.
I think you've nailed that, Jonty.
I think
Jonty.
We've cracked
the mystery of
happiness in life.
Oh, that is so great.
You just got to get a hot tub, get some beers.
Get married.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, that's my gratitude.
Oh, I love it.
Shout out to Jack and Amelia, the newlyweds. Hope you're enjoying your honeymoon, or even married life when you get back and not having listened to podcasts on your honeymoon. I know that Jack does listen. I don't know about Amelia, but
amazing. Thanks for sharing. That made me happy.
My pleasure. Cool. I think next week is our very final love, sex, and Jesus for now.
Can't believe it.
We could well revisit it later on because I don't know about you, but I've really enjoyed these conversations.
Yeah, it's been scary, very intimidating.
Which I think is why we need to have these conversations.
Probably.
The fact that they are scary, yeah, right? But next week, we are going to be talking about dating.
Dun, dun, dun.
I don't know about you, Ness, but I've got some good dating horror stories up my sleeve.
Oh, me too.
Ready to go. So, next week we'll be wrapping that with a discussion about dating, some purity culture in there as well. And then after that, we're going to be talking about The Exorcist, which is going to be...
I'm looking forward to that.
It's going to be very, very interesting. If you haven't seen the film, you've got a few weeks' notice. Try and track it down. It's on streaming somewhere, if not
rent it. Watch it in the daytime.
Yeah. Or, if you're cool... No, I'm kidding. go see it. Try and find it screening at a cinema somewhere and watch it
no.
in the dark with a group of people.
I'm Ness.
And I'm Jonty, and this is Filthy Hope. We'll see you next week when we dive into the world of dating. We'll see you then. Thanks for listening. Like I already said, next week we're wrapping up this series with a discussion about dating and purity culture. After which, we're then going to be talking about the demonic and the nature of evil with a look at the classic horror film, The Exorcist. Beyond that, we also have some very exciting guests lined up to talk to us in future episodes, and we look forward to sharing those conversations with you as they come out. Help us out by leaving a 5-star review or liking the video, depending on where you get this podcast, or even better, just share it with a friend. This podcast is entirely independent, and so it is your support that lets us continue to have these conversations. You can find us on socials or email us directly at filthyhopepod@gmail.com. Links to all our socials are down below, as well as links to some of the resources that we used in this episode. We look forward to seeing you next week to talk about dating and purity culture. But until then, take Jesus seriously and don't be a dick.